It's 8:15. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW with the Summit County Council meeting tomorrow. Starting at 1 o'clock, they'll be meeting at the Sheldon Richens building there at Kemble Junction. In the studio with a preview of the agenda, I have County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So we missed you a couple of weeks there. And you were telling me off air here that you spent some time in Morocco. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so the last week of April, I spent 5 weekdays, a couple of weekends traveling back and forth Morocco for my National Guard job. And basically what that was about is we send over our general officers or a general officer each year at this time to meet with their senior military folks in order to further what's called a state partnership. And each of our state National Guards in the United States have a partnership with one or two countries, mostly in Europe and Africa, but a little bit in Asia. And Utah's happens to be Morocco. So I got to go over and take that trip. We got to see two of our units doing some training. One was helping the Moroccans and the Tunisians do some regional training around disaster preparedness, which is a big National Guard job. And the other one was a medical group. We had about 40 folks from our medical team that were over there, and they provided medical services, the whole gamut, to over 6,000 folks in connection with the Senegalese and the Tunisians and the Moroccans. So it was really an interesting thing to see.
So it sounds like the U.S., being we, are doing the training and they're receiving, or is it reciprocal? It's
very reciprocal. I mean, certainly we go over and share some of the things that we do with these partner nations. Morocco is very advanced as far as their military in comparison to some other countries in Africa, but we're trying to promote with the U.S. military and the State Department more regional collaboration in that area. But what we get back from that, especially given some of the skills in the Utah National Guard around languages and special forces and those types of areas, is that we get a lot of interaction with foreign countries that we wouldn't normally get in just training here in the state.
Hmm. They all speak English?
They speak French mostly, but a lot of English as well, and Arabic, dialect of Arabic, and then some other languages as well. The history of Morocco is very interesting. Yeah. But an interesting tidbit is that Morocco, and they're very proud of this, Morocco was the first country to recognize the new United States when it declared independence. So the partnership goes a long way.
Yeah, and why Morocco? I mean, is it just kind of things were just...
Yeah, just how it was doled out at the time. The Moroccans have a very strong family value in their culture, and that plays well with the Utah Guard.
Okay, and this, I mean, is it you? Had you been abroad before?
I had not. You know, my background in the Utah Guard is mostly dealing being a commander of units, and my units never really had that much interaction with this partnership. So it was my first trip. But it's expanded a lot over the years, and like I said, we're doing things different things each year to advance that partnership.
And the units that got to participate in the training, I mean, are they full time folks?
Or? No, mostly part time military, just like I am. So they were doing it on their annual training time.
Okay, and they were chosen because of the skills they had.
That's correct. So linguists, different kind of medical professions. And those that, and of course, all of us deal with disaster preparedness. So that unit was specializing in that.
Looking to the agenda for tomorrow, you'll be getting an update from the Weed Control Board. It looks like the weed program this year will emphasize education as opposed to spraying, or?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the spraying part of the actual on-the-ground part of the weed department will continue. I mean, those programs are ongoing, especially some of the interaction that we have with citizens when they come and check out those weed sprayers and can buy some of the chemicals that help us control noxious weeds. But what I was really pleased about in reading the report was all the interaction with FFA students. around the county. There's everything from some of the biocontrols, which is a fancy name for some of the bugs that we can distribute to help control noxious weeds, and very interesting report on some of those and the different types of noxious weeds they control. But those students in the FFA programs seem to like to be part of those programs. So they're learning a lot as much as we are learning, and even our state weed folks are learning, because they're kind of the control around all that.
Yeah. Let's see. Also, Forest Service personnel was asked to come speak. Some of the topics include an exploratory oil well, bighorn and domestic sheep, and timber harvesting. So tell me about the oil well.
Well, I don't know much about that. There wasn't a huge amount of detail in the report, so we'll have to wait for Wednesday. But, we have the Forest Service folks in each year. The gentleman that's coming in is fairly new. He started within the last year. It will be interesting to hear about what he's emphasizing in his program. And then to get into a little bit of detail on some of that timber harvesting, it's been a subject that has been talked about by a couple of our council members in concern with wildfire. And some of the management of timber within our forests, especially some of the dead from beetle kill, how that can be managed better in order to control burns in the future.
Yeah, right now, is it the Forest Service just issues permits to those who ask?
Well, I don't know enough about it to talk intelligently, except that is their role. They issue permits for people to do. I've heard, part of the issues around us are that, whether there's markets for it, and whether there's enough sawmills in order to do that, and whether it's profitable. And, so all of those things come into play about how forests are managed. So I think it'll be a lively conversation.
Yeah. Any update with regard to the potential for fire danger?
Well, we're going to have the state issues their guidance this month. Bryce Boyer should be, our fire warden should be getting that within the next week. And then we have him scheduled later in the month to present to the council. So, early reports are that we're going to have, it's already a dry year, and it's going to be active. So we've got to be extra vigilant. And to follow the state legislature, actually, in their last session, controlled when fireworks can be used a little bit more. And I don't have the detail with me in front of that, but they did do that. So there'll be a little bit more vigilance on that and education, I'm sure, coming.
Yeah. Let's see, you'll have State Representative Tim Quinn joining you. There were no staff report on what the topics will be.
I think it's just an opportunity for the council to publicly talk with Representative Quinn about the last session, and then any concerns that our council has going into the next session. We're getting more active on the legislative front, and I'm sure that there's some things that we'll be asking Representative Quinn to help us with this next year.
All right. And then a similar meeting then with Logan Wild?
As soon as Logan wants to schedule it in, we'll be willing. I'm sure he's spending a little time with his family right now after the session.
Let's see. The state legislature authorized two new transit taxes. Council has to decide by June 30th if they want to implement them. So what are we talking about here?
Well, so the legislature did quite a large bill this last year on transportation that had dealt with everything from governance at UDOT and UTA to TIF districts related to transportation. Fees related to electric and hybrid vehicles, and then these taxes. If you'll recall, a couple of years ago, they implemented what they call the fourth quarter, a quarter percent tax that's eligible for transportation infrastructure, and not a lot of counties picked up that and adopted it. And two of the big ones were Salt Lake and Davis County that didn't. They wanted to provide a little bit more incentive for the local governments to adopt those taxes, to have that revenue available to do transportation infrastructure projects. On top of that, it's even though you can't have a fifth quarter, they adopted it and called it the fifth quarter, which is actually a 0.2% tax that would go to counties for for transit especially. And that's one of the big themes that the legislature is trying to push through some of this legislation, and I would expect through future legislation, is a more complete transportation system than just roads and bridges, where we're really, even UDOT is now getting into the governance of and funding of transit. So we're going to see a big culture change start to happen. And you can see it already in the Salt Lake Valley through tracks, but and some of the land use that happens around those tracks lines. But they're certainly wanting local governments to pick this up and take the lead on it.
So the fifth quarter is 0.2%, and what was the fourth quarter?
The fourth quarter is a 0.25%. And the distinction between them is that the 0.25% is for transportation infrastructure, so it has more flexibility between roads and transit and other modes. The fifth quarter is strictly transit. And so we have to start that conversation quickly because there's some deadlines coming up that have an effect on how those taxes would be implemented and how it would be collected. And so we're going to be full into that conversation for the next 2 months.
Again, this is sales tax that we're talking
this
about.
This is all sales tax. That's
mm-hmm.
correct.
And one of the fees, I understand, can go up to 100% would go to the county itself?
For the first year. So if a county chooses to implement that by July 1st of this year, it would go into place. And then the first year until the next July, the revenue would stay with the county. And then after that, not only does it go through a distribution formula at the state level, 50% point of sale, 50% population based, but then there's a distribution within the county as well, between cities, transit districts, unincorporated county, and county.
Yeah, I guess I think I recall us kind of not going along with it the first time it came around, and instead opting to just do it ourselves and keep all of the money all the time.
That's what we did. Is we implemented some other parts of those quarters, so the second and third quarter of that overall scheme of local taxes available, which those had more favorable distribution to the local areas. This one, you know, they're trying to provide incentives in two ways. First of all, that first year that the county would receive all that that funding, and then in the future, the local governments would be participating in that in some distribution. As well, they're taking away the requirement that it go to referendum. So the county council has the authority to implement these. And we're hearing from other counties on different methods. For instance, Salt Lake County has, at least I read in the newspaper, that they're asking their municipalities to have some percentage that support it before they adopt it. Not sure what's going to happen with Summit County yet, but that's one of the things we're going to talk about.
So do you have a recommendation to the council?
Well, you know, one of the things that was in the legislation before it got adopted was that they were going to take these taxes away if the option for these taxes was going to go away if the local governments didn't adopt them. So I would expect to see that come back in legislation, especially if there's not a lot of action by local governments this year. So they're really kind of putting the screws to local governments in a certain way to say it's time to step up and adopt these things that we've given you the authority to do.
So I guess I didn't understand. So when you talk about the second and third quarter taxes, we do or do not get to keep all of that that's raised?
Those were, my understanding is those were 100% retained by the local government. So they didn't go to a state distribution formula. In this case, the fourth quarter would after the first year, and the fifth quarter of 0.2% would not. It would stay all local.
Okay. Let's see, an update on the bike share program, and I think we could probably bring somebody else in to talk about that. But let's just talk about, because I had heard some stories about some recent incidents there. In terms of who's enforcing the rules, I mean, there's an 18 and older rule on them, and yet I had a report of a mom dropping off her five kids at Kimball Junction, the youngest probably 10, telling them to ride bikes while she went to shop. And
Yeah, I you know, it's a very difficult situation because we don't have a strong enforcement mechanism. I mean, we don't necessarily want to dedicate staff or the company that's servicing this to have to constantly be monitoring. And there's no really electronic way to do that because if a person swipes a credit card or signs up for the service for a longer period of time, they're agreeing in that service contract that they're meeting the rules. So it's kind of an honor system. And so I think at a very basic case, we'll be working with the chamber and with Park City and ourselves to do a lot more education around this to bring more personal responsibility to it, similar to what we do with, dogs and picking up waste when we're out with our dogs. It's really an honor system.
Yeah, we implemented them as a way to get people out of their cars. And so here was just a really cheap babysitter. So
in this case, that's correct. Mm-hmm. We're seeing some of that same activity, especially out at the Kimball Junction port where there's bikes right in front of Maxwell's. We see a little bit more kid activity there. One of the things that we've done is that our servicer, actually Bewegan, is out and has some people at these stations every once in a while to just remind people of what the rules are or help them access the bikes. We're able to do a little bit more of that this year as opposed to last year when we were first testing it out.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm seeing a lot more on the rail trail, and they're basically just going out and back. I mean, mm-hmm. they're not going anywhere, and they wouldn't get in their car to go drive down 248 and back again. So, I mean, again, it's really entertainment as opposed to transportation.
Well, it's probably some of that, but you know, in order to get the acceptance of this the system, sometimes you have to try it first. In order to see what you could use it for. And so I think we just need to keep monitoring the bikes and the app, provide us a lot of data on how it's used. And I think we can analyze that and direct our marketing a lot better as that goes along.
Yeah. And in terms of just the bikes operating, I had somebody tell me that the bikes at the canyons this weekend, basically none of them were charged. I mean, do we have a problem with that station in particular?
Don't know whether, I haven't heard mm-hmm. that one, but I'll check into it. And, you know, it's an electronic system. The same problems, you know, that we had last year, we're probably not going to experience exactly the same thing, but we'll probably experience new ones. I know that the company has done a lot of work to try and correct a lot of the problems that we experienced last year. A lot of it had to do with staffing and where they're located. And we know now that their servicing is located here right in the Snyderville Basin. So that's going to help out tremendously. Just in response time, when we hear those types of things about somebody reporting that the bikes are not working at a certain station, we can get on that a lot sooner.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I've got tons of stuff to mention. But, you know, conversations with council are coming up again. We've got three of them scheduled coming up Tuesday, May 22nd at Dana's breakfast place out in the Snyderville Basin, out at Quarry Village. Thursday, May 24th at Denise's Home Plate in Colville. Friday, May 25th at the Mirror Lake Diner in Camas. All three of those will be between 7 and 9 a.m. A great chance to come out on any subject and talk to the council members that are present and any staff. And then the dedication of the artwork at the underpass at Kimball Junction will happen on the 14th at about 5:30, I believe. So we're looking forward to that as well.
So can you tell us the difference between the artwork and graffiti? Have you heard that question?
You know, I've heard that criticism. Obviously, I read Tom Clyde's article in the newspaper this weekend as well. You know, as with all artwork, it's in the eye of the beholder. And so what's interesting is that the groups that were involved with this, you know, the Summit County Arts Council, the Park City Summit County Arts Board, Basin Rec, you know, we went through an RFP process for this. So it was vetted by these groups, and different artists were bid on that. This is considered artwork. So we're looking forward to it. And as much as the criticism has been, we're going to get a lot of kids involved in promoting art in the county, and that's a great thing.
Okay, Tom, thanks. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Park City Planning Commission meeting tomorrow, starting at 5:30 in the City Council Chambers in the studio to take a look at the agenda. Planning Director Bruce Erickson and Planner Hannah Tyler. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's just do you want to mention any of the
sure.
Gardner parcels or the Anderson Platt amendments before
well,
we go
the,
into
the little Platt amendments are administrative, and there's really not much going on other than we're trying to clean up the subdivision plats from the 1800s and the 1900s. And, you know, in the 70s and 80s, people built houses just about anywhere they wanted, so we have to clean those things up, and that's what the Planning Commission is going to do. The main things on the agenda are the affordable housing amendments to the master plan development. And I just wanted to start out and say, you know, we really appreciate KPCW and the ability to drive this message forward to the community. You may not see us around a lot, but there's a lot of activity underneath. We're coming forward with the amendments for solar. We're coming forward with the amendments for RV parking. We're coming forward with landscaping and xeriscaping improvements. And this one is a city council directed action to make sure that we can do everything we can do to encourage public-private partnerships to drive the affordable housing measure forward.
So what are we proposing then?
And
this has been before the Planning Commission, so it's coming back
for
final
approval? We're working on it right now. This is a recommendation of the City Council. We had a work session on it before, and we had some conversation with the City Council about it before. It's a very data-dense report and, you know, kind of approaching PhD master's level on the information. But the simple answer is, one, we want to make sure there are as few impediments as we can to get affordable housing moving forward. And two, we want to make sure that affordable housing fits into the neighborhoods. And that's consistent with the City Council basic strategy and the Planning Department basic strategy, which is really minimize the effect of the built environment on the natural environment and make sure we don't hurt the neighborhoods. So what Hannah and her team have done is come up with two sliding scales to change densities slightly to allow these public and private partnerships. One thing we want to put out there is that these changes may not drive pure private sector affordable housing. So if you were doing 1,000 apartments in Sugar House, you probably wouldn't want to look at trying to do that up here in Park City. First of all, we don't have parcels that are big enough for that. Second of all, there's rare that we're going to have a density that's going to accommodate that use with the appropriate amount of open space and parks and transit and parking and all the other things that go along with that. So the compromise for heavy density is you put additional uses on all your other town assets. And so anyway, make a long story short, what we've got is a sliding scale that increases the ability to do units depending on which average median income or AMI you're using. So if you're using a very low AMI of 30 to 40% of average median income, you're going to get more density. If you're closer to 50 or 60% of AMI, you're going to get slightly less density. One of the things Hannah's done a really nice job on is actually driving the attainable housing, which is housing at 120 to 150% of AMI. So it's not just the bottom kind of ends of the median income scale. It's actually for folks that are making $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year that are attainable. So the other density scale that Hannah's put in there is you're going to have to help me, Hannah, a little bit. The other density, we scale for proximity to transit. So the closer you are, the less parking we need. There's some contingencies in there for very small units and reducing the parking demand to make them more attractive. But really, this is designed to handle the public-private sector partnerships and not necessarily large-scale merchant builders doing apartments.
Okay. Does it address existing homeowners now? I mean, being able to, if they're doing a remodel, to add an accessory unit?
It does. The control mechanism on the accessory units has two components. One is we need to make sure that there's appropriate parking, right? I mean, despite all the good intentions of the community, cars are going to be around for a long time, whether it's 10 years, 15, 20 years. And cars on the street negatively affect the neighborhood. We're not running parking lots. We're not running car dealerships. If you have cars parked on the street, the mailman can't get to the mailbox. The garbage guy can't collect the garbage. The street sweeper can't sweep the sweeps. Sweep the streets. You know, if you have cars parked next to your driveway, you can't see when you're backing out. So parking is a big control mechanism on the ability to do an accessory apartment. The second one is right now we regulate them to be one within every 300 feet, which in Park Meadows, for example, is one every three houses. So we're not trying to double or triple the density for an accessory apartment.
Yeah. But I guess you're making accommodations for new construction for parking. Why wouldn't you do it for existing construction?
Because you can control new construction with deed restrictions, and you can't necessarily control it if somebody wants to do an accessory apartment. Everything we're trying to do is not drive cars onto the street. No pun intended. I'm sorry, Leslie. But we don't want cars parked on the street. So it doesn't matter whether it's an accessory apartment or you're a high-wealth second homeowner and want to park your Class A RV in your driveway, you can't put another car on the street for all those factors I just laid out there.
Hannah, anything you need to add to what he's kind of explained there?
No, I think he touched on it. And one piece with that accessory apartment thing is that this larger code change we're doing for affordable housing is for either one-acre parcels or structures with 10,000 square feet or more. And so a lot of these homes won't ever hit that threshold. And so that's kind of an important piece to understand as a private homeowner. You might not be able to use this section of code simply because of your size.
Yeah. And I guess why is it coming now? I mean, now that it's a critical priority for city council, it just seems to me you're kind of like just, you know, greasing the wheels here for the city applications to move through.
Well, we are. Absolutely. But this is a private-public partnership. And there are things the private sector does really well and the public sector is not very, very good at. And there are things that the public sector can do that the private sector is not very good at. So what we're looking at is a partnership. We have land, and the mayor will tell you we have land, and the city council will tell you we have land. But we don't necessarily have the development expertise to drive the financing through correctly or the sort of creative energy to drive projects forward as well. So it's a combination of our land. It's a combination of the expertise and the experience of the private sector. And that is co-joined with the requirements on our bigger projects to drive housing forward that as part of their master plan developments. So it's a three-way triangle that we're trying to expedite forward.
Yeah. So like Woodside Park, though, I mean, that right now the city's the developer on that, no?
Oh, yeah, we are.
So you're not going to reach out to a
On Woodside Park, we are not. Woodside Park Phase 2, at this point, we're probably going to do it in-house. But I think on some of our larger parcels or the way the Ivory Homes project is working at Park City Heights, those are public-private partnerships.
Well, the city sold that. How is that a public partnership?
We also control the number of units they're developing, the rate of the development, and we have some control over the conditions and covenants and the deed restrictions.
All right. So what we're looking at is the Homestake Lot?
Homestake Lot, a couple of parcels east of Iron Horse. There's a couple others in town that I can't have off the top of my head here.
Okay. All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, thank you, Leslie. We appreciate it.
Okay. Bruce, Hannah, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
KPCW joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a certified health coach at East West Health Clinic here in Park City. We're a wellness clinic that blends Eastern medicine and Western medicine to treat accordingly with functional medicine and stem cell therapy. So I work with our patients to help them make the lifestyle changes that are being recommended by the provider. So I bridge that gap between the provider and the patient and support them and guide them through these changes and hold them accountable, which is the most important thing.
Okay. Well, the topic tomorrow is I've got 99 problems, but nourishing ain't one. So tell me about that.
Yep. What we're going to talk about tomorrow is nourishing the body and the mind to have an overabundance of energy and vitality for life. So the way that we can do that is through primary foods and secondary foods. which we will talk about those that difference tomorrow. And there might even be a snack involved while I am talking.
Okay, well, can you kind of give us the cliff notes then of what people should expect?
Yes, it's not all about what we put in our mouth that can give us energy in life. It's much more holistic and looking at the whole person. It matters about our career and our physical activity level and our relationships and our spirituality. So it is important what we put in our mouth for energy, definitely, but there is a lot of other things to look at in life as well, and that's what we're going to talk about tomorrow, is how to nourish our mind and our body to give our soul that boost, the power, the passion for life.
Yeah. Now, are you an advocate of the whole paleo and keto movement, or are you one that just says, you know what, a little bit of grains, a little bit of fruit, lots of vegetables is the way to go?
Good question. Yeah, good question. A lot of information is out there, and it's very confusing for people sometimes on what to do or what works. But here at East West Health, and me as well as a health coach, we are looking at bioindividuality. So we're looking at the individual. Does it work for that person? Does it not? Some of us can eat protein and feel fine. Some of us cannot eat animal protein, or it doesn't make us feel good, or we need very little in our diet. So we're all so different, and that's what makes us unique as a health clinic, is that we're looking at the individual and very customizing their program to get where they want to go. And so, yes, we are pro-paleo and pro-keto, but we're pro a lot of other things as well.
Mm-hmm. And you determine whether or not somebody is works with one diet over another based on what, just food journaling, or I mean, how and how they feel, and that they're kind of responsible for determining that, or
being aware and in tune with your body and how you're feeling. Food journal is a great thing, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit tomorrow. But it's being aware and in tune with your body on how you're feeling. You know, are you getting bloated after a certain food meal? Do you have a headache? Do you feel sluggish? Do you have brain fog? So there's a lot of things that can go into learning what works for your body.
And those
and that's
are
what I'm here for as a health coach, is to guide you through that.
Right. And those are all indications of what? A food does not sit with you, you're allergic to? I mean, what are those headaches and
could be. It could be an intolerant aspect of your body. It could be something with your gut health. It could be something a little off on brain health, you know, serotonin and dopamine levels. Could be your stress hormone is too high. So lots of different organs that we're looking at, and a lot of different aspects of life. And that's what we do here at East West, is delve into that and get you to where you want to go through functional medicine and Eastern medicine.
Okay. Well, if people want to learn more, again, just show up tomorrow at 12 noon tomorrow at the PC Mark Party Room. Erin, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to it.
Morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour. Well, coming up on Saturday, it's a chance to help beautify Park City. Two community events are happening in the studio. With details, I have Park City landscape gardener Maria Barn, along with Recycle Utah director Carolyn Warwick. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So they're both happening, what, 9 to noon?
Correct. Yep, both on Saturday from 9 till noon.
Okay. And tell us, Recycle Utah has traditionally kind of taken the Pride in Your Park cleanup.
Yeah, we've done the Pride in the Park at least maybe a dozen years now, usually in the springtime. We meet at City Park. We go kind of break into groups of, you know, 4 or 6 and clean up the area around City Park, you know, kind of in the creek there, in and around the creek, up to Deer Valley Drive, hit up the stairs in Old Town. They get some stuff hidden under the stairs. So the more people we have, the more we can get clean. So it's usually annual event for us.
Okay. So you used to have breakfast and stuff. What are you offering this time? Just trash bags?
No, we will provide some coffee and some bagels or little snacks to get your day going, or maybe some granola bars to take away, but nothing, not a full breakfast this time. Given the weather and everything like that, I think we're just going to get in and get to work on Saturday.
Yeah. And again, you just, can people choose, say, I want to stay in my neighborhood? And just
100%. Yeah. We do have a group of NHS students from Winter Sports School that reached out, and they want to be involved and specifically clean around the Winter Sports School. So we kind of will be going all that way, but probably not in between. They're going to meet at their area and clean their area. So if you have a specific area that you're passionate about, I encourage you to get on clean around your backyard, your home, your school, whatever means something to you.
Okay. And then additionally, Maria, it's the Arbor Day tree planting, and I'm not sure we've done this before, huh?
Yeah, we've done this many times. So every year, and we used to always partner with Pride in Your Park, and they would do a cleanup, and I would give away seedlings at the park. Years past, though, we have planted trees in various areas, such as the Carl Winters Field, Olympic Welcome Plaza, Mowini parking lot. We've planted trees there. So there have been many projects. This year, our project is out at Prospector Park, and we're going to plant some spruce seedlings there, so it should be fun.
Okay. So what do people need to do? Just show up there?
Just show up there. I'm going to have some seedlings to give away because it's Mother's Day the next day. So I'll have some seedlings there. Bring your rain jackets and, you know, thick gloves, because I don't think it's going to be that nice of weather. I'll have some shovels there. We're going to plant some one-gallon spruce trees, and it should be fun.
Yeah. Now, why do we plant spruce?
Well, spruce right there, there's a great water source, underneath water source. It's a high water table. So I think that's going to be a great spot for spruce. You know, I could be planting fir and pine, but we have a problem there with the elk and moose coming through, and they seem to leave the spruce alone.
Okay, and that's why we don't plant some other kind of deciduous tree then?
Well, we have deciduous trees there also. They tend to scrape those trees with their antlers, but, you know, that's just cosmetic.
Okay, so again, you're meeting also at 9, and
yep,
you'll have plenty of work for people
yes,
to do?
Yes, we'll have plenty of work, and I'm going to have bags there, too. So if people want to clean up there, they can go upstream and meet the other people at City Park. So drop your bag, and the Parks Department is going to run around and pick up all the bags. So we're heavily involved.
Okay. Yeah, that's easy then. Just leave the trash
yep.
bag
leave
where
the
it
trash.
Is.
Yes. Uh-huh. We're going to have two bags, right?
Yeah, we'll have a bag for recycling. Like everybody that volunteers can grab a bag for recycling and a bag for trash. And if you want to sort as you pick up, that's great. And we'll take all the recyclables back to Recycle Utah and get them sorted there. And I did want to note, with the weather being kind of iffy on Saturday, both events are from 9 until noon. If you just want to come for an hour and you get cold and you want to leave, that's okay. If you want to stay cozy at your coffee at home until 10 and show up at 10, we can accommodate anybody. You know, it'll be real obvious where our groups are, you know. The trash pickers will be wearing neon vests. You won't miss them. And Maria's group will probably be around the trees. So
yeah, every
feel free
bit,
to join in or out whenever you want.
Every little bit helps.
Yeah,
okay,
totally
anything
helps.
Else?
That'll be it.
Okay. Hey, thanks. KPCW News Time now.